Reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 13, The Descendants of Dhruva Maharaj, Text 26 to 28. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So read text 26 and 27, then we sing together the 28. Tamuchu vismitas tatra yajamanam matartvijaham avinshi huyamanani nate grananti devataha. The priests engaged in the sacrifice then informed King Anga, "O king, we are properly offering the clarified butter in the sacrifice, but despite of our efforts, the demigods do not accept it." Rajan havin shadushtani shradhaya saditani te chandhansyayatayamani yojitani dhritavratai. O king, we know that the paraphernalia to perform the sacrifice is well collected by you with great faith and care and is not polluted. Our chanting of the Vedic hymns is also not deficient in any way. For the Brahmanas, for all the Brahmanas and priests present here are expert and are executing the performances properly. Purport. It is the practice of the Brahmanas conversant with the science to pronounce a Vedic mantra in the right accent. The combination of the mantra and Sanskrit words must be chanted with the right pronunciation, otherwise it will not be successful. In this age, the Brahmanas are neither well-versed in the Sanskrit language nor very pure in practical life. But by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can attain the highest benefit of sacrificial performances. Even if the Hare Krishna Mantra is not chanted properly, it still has so much potency that the chanter gains the effect. Now text 28. Please repeat. Navida meha devanam. Navida meha devanam. Helanam vayaman vapi. Helanam vayaman vapi. Yang nagrananti bhagam swan. Yang nagrananti bhagam swan. Ye deva karma sakshinaha. Ye deva karma sakshinaha. Navida meha devanam. Helanam vayaman vapi. Yang nagrananti bhagam swam. Ye deva karma sakshinaha. Navida meha devanam. Helanam vayam vam vapi. Yang nagrananti bhagam swam. Ye deva karma sakshinaha. Thank you. quantas vezes? Word for word, nam, not, vidamam, can find, iham, in this connection, divanam, of the demigods, helanam, insult, neglect, vayam, we, Anu, minute, api, even, yat, because of which, na, not, grananti, accept, bhagan, shares, swan, om, ye, who, Devaha, the demigods, karma sakshinaha, witnesses for the sacrifice. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Dear King, we do not find any reason that the demigods should feel insulted or neglected in any way. But still, the demigods who are witnesses for the sacrifice do not accept their shares. We do not know why this is so. Please repeat. Dear King, we do not find any reason that the demigods should feel insulted or neglected in any way. But still the demigods who are witnesses for the sacrifice do not accept their shares. We do not know why this is so. Purport. It is indicated herein that if there is negligence on the part of the priest, the demigods do not accept their share in sacrifices. Similarly, in devotional service, there are offenses known as seva aparada. Those who are engaged in worshipping the deity, Radha and Krishna, in the temple, should avoid such offenses in service. The offenses in service are described in the Nectar of Devotion. If we simply make a show of offering service to the deity, but do not care for the seva aparada, certainly the Radha Krishna deity will not accept offerings from such non-devotees. Devotees engaged in temple worship should not, therefore, manufacture their own methods, but should strictly follow the regulative principles of cleanliness, and then offerings will be accepted. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Katanchana smrite yasmin duskaram sukaram bhavit vismrite viparitam syat shri chaitanya namamitam. So we read three verses. The first one, the priests are executing the sacrifice for King Anga, and they inform the king that we are properly offering the clarified butter in the sacrifice, but despite of our efforts, the demigods do not accept it. They went on saying that we know that the paraphernalia to perform the sacrifice is well collected by you with great faith and care, and is not polluted. Our chanting of Vedic mantras is also not deficient in any way, for all the brahmanas and priests present here are expert and are executing the performances properly. So Prabhupada made the point in that purport that in previous ages it was possible to execute sacrifices and to actually get the results. Prabhupada even explains in a previous purport that the demigods, they would appear in front of the person executing the sacrifice. They could see, everyone participating, they could see the demigods in front of them. And they could see Lord Vishnu when they would come. So, nowadays when you do sacrifice, I never heard of devotees seeing the demigods or Lord Vishnu appearing in front of the sacrifice and addressing the audience and giving them blessings. So we don't hear about this. So in previous ages, people had the qualification to invoke the demigods and they would come. And they would be manifest in front of the priest and the person executing sacrifice. Nowadays, Prabhupada says, we don't have the qualification to do that. But we can achieve the same result by chanting the Maha Mantra Hare Krishna. So then the question is, can we see the result of the Maha Mantra Hare Krishna nowadays in practice? Can we see that very clearly in front of our eyes? So I was thinking about that and some stories came in my mind. No? First I remember that once a couple of Prabhupada disciples, they are telling me a story how they came to preach in India. And Prabhupada sent them to a small village where they started preaching. And the place was very poor and people were having problems because for a long time it was not raining. So this couple was trying to preach there, but people were so hungry and so poor that basically they only would come for prasadam. They wouldn't come for the program, they wouldn't hear class, they wouldn't chant, they would only come for prasadam. So that was going on for some time, and then that devotee became upset and a little angry, and he told the people that that's why you're so poor, that's why you don't have rain, that's why you're starving. You don't come for kirtan. You're chanting the holy names and you're not coming. So then he said, if you don't chant the holy name, if you don't perform yagya, the Bhagavad Gita says there will be no rain. So that's why you're starving. So those people, they heard, they listened very carefully, and then the leader of the village came. And he told the devotee that so far you didn't come for the kirtan, but you are telling us that if we come to the kirtan, the rain will come. So tomorrow, I promise the whole village will come. I'm bringing the whole village for the kirtan, and I'm going to sing with you. But if the rain doesn't come after that, we're going to kill you and all your family. So he had a wife and he had a small child, a small daughter. There are three of them living there and preaching. So in those circumstances, I think if I would be in that situation, I would be tempted to run away overnight and try to escape, not take the risk. But they decided to stay and they organized the kirtan for the next day. And all the village came and they started singing and singing and singing. And as they were singing, the clouds started to appear in the sky. And by the end of the kirtan, a big rain came. So the people became very, very happy, very faithful in the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Then when I heard that story, then I felt very interested, and I actually later on found out that Prabhupada did similar things. Prabhupada once received a letter from the government in Andhra Pradesh asking him support from ISKCON because of the drought in the state. So they had a long time without rain, and then the government wrote a letter asking Prabhupada, can you bring your society here so that you can feed the people who are starving with food for life, and also if you can give some financial contribution for we are raising funds to help people. So Prabhupada's answer is saying that we're not going to give money, we're going to do kirtan. And Prabhupada actually got the result. After chanting Hare Krishna, then he made the rain come. So that happened there, happened in Hyderabad, and like that, Prabhupada had also, he proved in different occasions that by chanting Hare Krishna, we could invoke the rain. So it's just proving a Shastric point. No, the Bhagavad Gita says, Yagya Bhavati Parjanya. From Yagya comes rain. And the Yagya for this age is chanting Hare Krishna. So by chanting Hare Krishna with faith, then one can actually achieve the result. So the main process of this age, as you know, is chanting Hare Krishna. The Bhagavatam says that also. Yagyai Sankirtana Prayai Yajanti Hisumeda Saha. So those who are intelligent in this age of Kali, what do? They worship the Supreme Lord by Sankirtana Yagya, mostly. That doesn't exclude other practices. It's not only by Sankirtana Yagya. It's not Sankirtana Yagya Kevalam. It's Yagyai Sankirtana Prayai. Praya means mostly. Or that means this is the major, the chief process. So other things also go on. Prabhupada established in Isko, not only chanting, established Ratha Yatras, established deity worship, established many, many programs, food for life. But in order for these programs to be fully successful, they should be accompanied by the chanting of Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So, some time ago, I was studying the Mayapur Academy, the deity worship course. And it was very interesting how much emphasis Pankajanga and Jani Vasprabhu were giving in the chanting, to the extent that if you could do your puja, you could do the archana, they're supposed to do, and at the same time you can chant all the time the Maha Mantra Hare Krishna, or you can chant some different shlokas, or you can sing some Vaishnava song while you dress the deity, while you bathe the deity, while you decorate the altar. If you could do that, you would get extra marks in the assessment. So they emphasize in many occasions that while worshipping the deities, we should be chanting also. And that point comes also in the Acharyas. Jiva Goswami explains also that in this age, even though we may do deity worship, we may do different things, but this thing should be accompanied by chanting. And deity worship is very favorable for that, because actually from the beginning of the process, we start chanting mantras for the spiritual master, we meditate on our spiritual identity, and we chant mantras glorifying the Holy Dham, meditating in Navadvip Dham, on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and all the deities. Then comes to Vrindavana Dham, Radha Krishna. In this way, the whole process of Archanam is pervaded by chanting. And not only offering 16 upacharas, but even after that, when you're dressing the deity, you can be chanting. So, I remember that in my exam, because I didn't have the practice to do so, I wasn't very fluent in the sequence of what I should offer. I had to think a little bit, but because I was trying to chant the mantras nicely, then Janani Vasprabhu said, okay, you need a little more practice, but because you chanted nicely, I'll give you a good mark. So I was always emphasized that point. No? So the chanting should be the chief element, and then so many other things can be put together with that. So this shloka Prabhupada is emphasizing that we should, with faith, chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra as the Yagya for this age, and then you can achieve all success, even if the chanting is not perfect. Then in the next verse, there's another point. Prabhupada explains that in the same way that the demigods, they don't appear if there is some negligence of the priest. Similarly, in devotional service, if someone is worshipping the deities, then they should not commit offense. Because if you commit seva aparada, offenses in the service of the deities, then the deities may not accept the offerings. Right? So there are stories like that.
about his miracles. So many miracles. So many things he would do to reciprocate with the pujari, to reciprocate with the devotees who are approaching Jagannath. And in so many ways, Jagannath would show that he's actually accepting worship,
that he is happy and he is reciprocating with the devotees. So I don't have to tell those stories because most of you who live here, you know. And if you don't know, there's a whole book, you know, Jagannath in Rajapur. So Nisinghadeva is another example, very famous example, you know, how the deity is always reciprocating with the devotees and answering the prayers practically instantly. And Radha Madhava also has stories, you know, but somehow they didn't write a book about Radha Madhava. So once I was asking Jani Vas Prabhu, why didn't you write a book about Radha Madhava? They don't reciprocate, they don't show anything special. And then he told a story that once they're offering milk. And every day they put the hot milk there, and besides the glass of milk, they put an empty glass so that Krishna can do like this, no? He can pour the hot milk from one glass to the other and make it cool down. In the Vrajabhasa they had that custom, no? One time I was taking milk in a Vrajabhasa's house, and they keep doing like this with the glass until they get, not only they get the milk to cool down, but also they get a lot of, foam on top of the milk, no? It's very nice. So the Krishna was accustomed to that system. Every day the pujari would put the milk and put an empty glass. So one day they forgot to put the glass. And then Janivasa Prabhu is outside, he's ringing the bell, he's offering, and then he remembered that, oh, I forgot to put the extra glass. Anyway, now it's already going on, what to do, no? So he's offering outside and chanting Gayatri, and suddenly he heard a sound of the glass falling on the ground. So he went inside the altar and he saw the milk was spilled. And Krishna tried to drink and it was too hot and he just dropped the glass. No? So like that, Radha Madhava, they also reciprocate. They are also present because the devotees are worshipping according to the proper standards. They are following the rules. So Prabhupada says you should follow strictly the principles for cleanliness and worship, and then Krishna will accept. No? So it's a very important point. Seva parada also should be careful with that. So basically we have two points here. There's the holy name, which is the chief process for the age. No? And we have also the service, the worship of the deity, that also we have to be careful. So the nectar of devotions explain that sometimes we may accidentally commit mistakes while worshipping the deities. But if we chant nicely, then Krishna will forgive us. Because in this age, chanting is the main process. And if we can chant nicely, all the offenses can be nullified. Of course, you cannot do that purposely. You cannot say, okay, anyway, I'll do it very quickly and I'll neglect the procedures, and then afterwards I'm going to chant. So if you do that, then becomes Namaparada, the seventh Namaparada, no? That you make a mistake on the strength of the holy name, then it doesn't work. But if some small accident happens, and if by mistake, if by distraction, or by any reason, there is a problem in the worship, then by chanting the holy name, that can be nullified. So the story here is that King Anga is trying to perform a sacrifice, and the demigods, they don't appear. So it's a big problem. He collected so much paraphernalia. So many priests are there, so much organizing and preparing, and then now they're doing the yagya and it's not working. So it's a problem. So to solve that problem, then they have a nice idea. They say, King, oh my King, there is no fault on your part in this life. You didn't do anything wrong, you commit no offense. But in a previous life, you commit some offense. And because of that, you don't have a son. And because of that, the demigods are not coming. And we think that if you call Lord Vishnu and you worship Lord Vishnu for a son, then when Lord Vishnu comes, all the demigods will come. So that's another point that they make here. And with that understanding, okay, so we worship Lord Vishnu, and Vishnu is coming, he's the leader of all the demigods, so all the demigods will come automatically. So the point I want to make is not so much about the pastime that we're going to see in the next days, but like he had a problem. and he solved that problem. So he got Lord Vishnu to come. He got the demigods to come. He got a son. But then he got a bigger problem in the end, that his son was not a devotee. And his son gave him so much trouble, not only to him, but to so many people. So he ends up giving up family life and taking sannyas. So I was thinking about what can we learn from that, from his life, no? All these different events, so many problems and one after another. So he solved one problem, then another problem comes. So I think that our life is also similar, no? The experience we have is that we're always trying to solve some problem, but as soon as one problem is solved, then another problem comes. And we may go on the whole life trying to solve problems, and more problems will appear in due course of time. So basically we just like when there is a weed, no? You cut the grass and it sprouts again. And you cut again and it sprouts again because the root is still there. So the root cause of all problems is actually material existence. We may try to solve problems, but more problems will appear because the real problem is the material existence. Is that we are conditioned souls, we are here in this material world and trying to be the controller, trying to enjoy. So that is the root cause. And as long as that situation is there, we're going to have so many problems, one after another. So it's not a question of becoming expert in solving problems. It's a question of trying to uproot the original problem. And only when that original problem is solved, then we can become free from problems. That is real, that is true for individual life, that is true also for collective life. In ISKCON, in the history of ISKCON, short history, we saw that so many problems they appear. And then after some time, somehow that problem is dealt with, and then another problem comes. And then we solve the problem, another problem comes. And it's not a question of making so many meetings to solve the problems, and so many managerial decisions. Is actually a question of purity. The more the devotees become pure, the more we can solve all the problems. So once I was attending a seminar here in Mayapur by Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, and his seminar was entitled Spiritual Basis for Reform. So he started by pointing out how ISKCON went through so many problems, the crisis of the gurus, the crisis of this, crisis of that. And then he said, actually, we solve one problem, but another one comes. So how can we solve all the problems? And then he came to the conclusion that it's only by spiritual purity. The more we make advancement, the more we become purified from false ego, the less we're going to have problems. Because all these problems are arising from our false ego. So, in both ways, not collectively or individually, the problems, they come because of our material conditioning, and therefore to solve them we have to become self-realized. It may appear, oh, but so difficult. How can, that's not practical. But it's the only real solution. All the other solutions would be temporary solutions. And so we have to somehow see that, yes, just like the king here, he got a problem, he solved that problem, he got another one, he solved that one, but then he was getting a worse one, until then he took full shelter of the Lord. In his case, he had to take sannyas and go to the forest. So in our lives also we go through problems, no? And then sometimes you cannot understand why Krishna is doing this. No, I'm just trying to serve Krishna, I'm trying to be a devotee, so Krishna could make my life easier. Doesn't make sense? No, if I'm trying, okay, if I wanted to be a karmi, if I want just to enjoy, I don't want to be a devotee, then Krishna should put obstacles in my life, as many as possible, so that I understand my foolishness and I try to become a devotee. But after I try, I already decide, okay, I want to be a devotee. And still Krishna is putting obstacles. And still the problems are coming. Why? No, apparently it doesn't make sense. Because, okay, Krishna, I want to be a devotee. Why don't you could make very easy for me to be a devotee now. Why do you have to still put obstacles? So, Sometimes ago I was complaining to Krishna about that. No? Why are you putting these obstacles? Because I want to serve you. I just want to understand what you want. I just want to be engaged in your service. So please make it easy. No, why do you have to make it difficult? It's for your own good. So then I remember Prabhupada's example. No? And Prabhupada, he wanted to be a devotee. He was a pure devotee. He wanted only to preach Krishna consciousness. He wanted to go and fulfill the order of his spiritual master, which is to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Krishna could make it very easy. Krishna could give a lot of money to Prabhupada. So that was his original idea, that I'm going to make a lot of money, I'll become a successful businessman, and then I'll go to the West and preach. But it didn't work. Krishna broke that plan to pieces. And Prabhupada tried so many things, no? And they didn't work. And when finally Prabhupada decided to go to America, he had no money, he had no support from any government, no support from any institution, even his own godbrothers, they didn't have faith in him. They didn't want to support him. So he was alone, he had no money, he was an old man, no? And with all these difficulties, he went to America. So, and in America, he didn't get a group of rich people who are very interested in Vedic culture and are going to give him all support. No, he got a bunch of young people who are crazy and like they have no money, they have nothing to, they don't know how to help also. So, if we look, Krishna could have made it much easier. No? Prabhupada already has the right intention, he has the right desire. He wants to serve Krishna only. There's no personal motivation there. So why Krishna has to still make it difficult? But if you look at the end of the story, then you see that Krishna actually had a plan, which, even though it was different from the original plan that Prabhupada had, but it was actually a much better plan, because Krishna wanted to accomplish something much greater. So by putting all those obstacles, Krishna actually glorified Prabhupada much more. And he also gave us much more faith. Because if we had a leader, okay, our spiritual master, our spiritual acharya in our ISKCON, oh, anyway, he had so much support from the Indian government, he had so much support from the Gaudiya Math, so much money was flowing, so it wasn't so difficult. So how much faith would we have? We would think, okay, Prabhupada did that because he had so much support. But I cannot do. I don't have that. But no, Krishna put Prabhupada in the most difficult situation. Basically put him to the limit, no? Almost dying in the ship going to America. So took him to the edge, to the ultimate limit. And then Krishna proved that in spite of all the difficulties, Prabhupada could do that wonderful work. So how much more faith we get by seeing that kind of example? And how much more confidence we get that we can also do something in spite of all the difficulties, no? So Prabhupada did that with, and Krishna did that with Prabhupada, Krishna did that with Arjuna in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, such a difficult situation, and he's going to do that with us, no? So we shouldn't expect life to be easy, we shouldn't expect that everything is going to be very natural and flowing very nicely just because we are trying to be devotees. But somehow, if we get the faith that this is what we should do, now we should try to serve Krishna and put all the energy there and be humble enough to admit that maybe our ideas are not the best. No? Maybe we think that the best way to serve Krishna is like this, but maybe it's not. Maybe Krishna has a better plan. And if we have that, then the choice we have, the alternative we have is to, okay, so let Krishna take care of the outcoming, and let me take care of serving him. Oh, and Krishna says, Ananya Shintayantamam Yajana Paripasati. If someone is trying to serve me without any deviation, Tesham Nitya Bhyuktanam Yoga Kshema Vahamyaham. So, to that kind of devotee who is always trying to serve me all the time without any deviation, to him I bring what they lack and I preserve what they have. So if we try to do that, no, we try to do our part, okay, I'll try to serve Krishna. And let Krishna decide how he wants to conduct my life. And usually the experience, at least that the little experience I had, is that when you look back, then you see, wow, I wanted to do that thing, and Krishna didn't allow. Such a relief. No, if I would have done that, it would be a disaster. But Krishna protected me against that desire, protected me against achieving success in something which was not going to be good for my life. And instead, he put me through so many troubles which actually brought me to a better situation. So, Yoga Kshema Vahamyaham. Krishna protects what we have, Krishna brings what we lack, and being more intelligent than we are, Krishna will find the best way and the shortcut for us to make spiritual advancement. Okay, so basically in these three shlokas, I thought of these three different points. One is about the potency of the holy name, which is not something theoretical. We can see it happen, even not only with Prabhupada, but even with devotees, no? Normal devotees like us, that they had faith in the holy name and they are not disappointed. Krishna actually showed how he was present there. Also we saw how we have to be very sincere and careful in our service, whatever service you do, and that we have to have faith in Krishna, because Krishna has a good plan, even though we may not understand it very easily. His ways are very complicated sometimes, but if we trust Krishna and we try to dedicate our life in his service, then he'll take care in the best way that we can conceive. Okay? So I'll stop here. If anyone has questions or comments, yes, Prabhu. Gita Nagar Prabhu. Sorry, Gita Nagar Prabhu, he raised first. Next, Prabhupada Prabhu. Prabhupada Das Prabhu.
I was just going to say, you're speaking about miracles or things about with Radha Madhava. I think the biggest thing is that he has a somewhat of a self-manifesting Brahmin threat.
Sorry, the big thing is what?
That Madhava has a self-manifesting Brahmin threat. If you look at him very carefully on certain days when he's dressed, I can't get so close, but you can see it around his. And that's really...
Okay, so, thank you, Prabhu, for that, no?
Yeah, he's a totally black deity, and if you look at him very carefully when he has his shirt off, sometimes you can see his self-manifesting.
Yes, Mangalarti time is good to see, because Krishna has not so many clothes. Then you can see his Brahman thread perfectly in place. Yeah, it's all black, and only that white line there, exactly as a Brahman thread. Thank you, Prabhu, for reminding this. Prabhupada Das Prabhu?
Yes, just two quick things. One is, if I can, can I contribute one shloka for the first part of your class about the importance of how the holy name is the basis. Mantratas tantratas jidram desa kalar havastu taha sarvam karoti nishjidram anu sankirtinam tava. If there may be mistakes in the place, desha, in the time, the kala, in the vastu, the ingredients, and the arha, the recipient or the beneficiary of the sacrifice. But sarvam karoti nishchitam, everything becomes free from any error or fault when your holy name is chanted. I don't remember exactly where in the Bhagavatam, but it's a Bhagavatam verse. My question is that we're a preaching movement, and sometimes we hear devotees saying, well, how many temples did you open? How many devotees did you make? And Prabhupada also, you can say partially because he was managing the passionate Westerners, that he was managing that energy, so he just, encouraged a lot of external, very vigorous activity for going out and distributing books, etc. But doesn't that create a problem where, because the two things seem to be in the same line, that you are emphasizing that, and you mentioned how Ravindra Sarup also, the spiritual advancement is the basis of the external expansion of the Hare Krishna movement, but because very often the external aspect seems to be what we should be doing and what would please Prabhupada, although we know Prabhupada wanted us is spiritually advanced, but still that was the emphasis. So could you say a few words how we could avoid the confusion between material advancement and spiritual advancement? There are some devotees, very respectable devotees, who warn us that we have to beware of the Kanishtha mentality of just creating a big infrastructure and having, you know, everything very nice in the external, but neglecting the essence. So I don't know if you want to make any comment on that.
Okay, so both things, they have to go simultaneously, because without the purity, you don't have force, you don't have strength to carry out the mission. That if you try to do on our own strength, that will be limited to whatever material achievement you can do. But when you actually rely on the spiritual master and Krishna and really take shelter, then we can do much more. No? Prabhupada sent devotees to preach in China, to preach in Africa, to preach in Brazil. They didn't even speak the language. The devotee who went to Brazil first, he couldn't speak a word in Portuguese. But somehow, in the short time he spent there, he got people to join him who are still nowadays the leaders of society there. So basically he went to an English school and he came there only with faith that Prabhupada sent him there. So he came dressed as a brahmachari in an English school and he said, "Do you have any student who could translate a seminar on Bhagavad Gita?" And the teacher said, "My best student didn't come to class today. My best student, he lives nearby. I can give you the address and you go there and ask him." So this brahmachari went, I forgot his name, the Prabhupada disciple, went there to that house, to that address. He knocked the door, and that young man opened the door, and he was missing his English class because that day he had just bought a Bhagavad Gita, and he was reading the Bhagavad Gita at home. So then a brahmachari comes, shaved head, saffron robes, and he says, "I would like you to translate a Bhagavad Gita seminar." He said, "But I'm just reading a Bhagavad Gita." So he showed the Bhagavad Gita in his hand. And the devotee said, "No, this Bhagavad Gita, that was very thin Bhagavad Gita." And then he took the big Bhagavad Gita by Prabhupada, said, "This is the Bhagavad Gita as it is." So that young man became very, very eager to have that Bhagavad Gita. He said, "How can I have it?" He said, "No problem. You translate my seminar. When I finish, I go back to America. I leave the book with you. I don't have other copies." And like that, they started the Hare Krishna movement in Brazil. And that devotee is Navantari Swami. He's still preaching with his brother, both Prabhupada disciples and very active preachers in Brazil. So that shows that it's not something that you accomplish through material expertise. It's something that because of the faith in the spiritual master, your sincerity, you go and you accomplish something amazing. Another example that comes to mind is Bhaktivedanta Maharaj. He was externally doing so much. He was preaching in Russia, the Soviet countries, no? And he was doing amazing things, but then he wrote a letter to Prabhupada, like an article, reflecting on his own spiritual life. And he would say, "Prabhupada, today is the last day of my life, and then I'm going to go back to you. And when I meet you, what I'm going to say? I'm going to say, 'Prabhupada, I have been preaching in this country, in that country, so many things.' And then you're going to ask, 'Very nice, my dear disciple, but did you become purified? Did you give up sex desire?' And then he said, 'No, Prabhupada, actually I was preaching like this and like that, and I was preaching to great leaders in society.' And Prabhupada said, 'Oh, very nice. But did you become purified? Did you give up sex desire?' And then he would go on, 'No, Prabhupada, but I was chanting every day so many rounds, and I was fasting all the Ekadashis, and I was doing this, and I was doing that.' And Prabhupada said, 'Oh, I'm very proud of you, my dear son, but did you give up sex desire?' And then he would go on and on and on, enumerating so many services that he did in ISKCON, how many temples and farm communities and this and that. And Prabhupada was only getting more and more grave. And then at one point, he understood that, I think in the end he says, 'Prabhupada, okay, so I understood the message, and I'm happy that I still have some time to cultivate my internal Krishna consciousness.' Something in those lines, he concludes saying that, okay, I'm lucky, I'm happy that I still have some time to look inside now and to develop that internal side." And also, that was an article that he wrote. It wasn't actually the end of his life. But when he was actually leaving his body, then he told his disciples that now I have to focus inside. I'm not anymore Bhakti Tirtha Swami, I'm not anymore a sannyasi, a guru, a leader. I am Krishna's servant, and in the last days of my life I want to focus on that identity. No? I want to be really thinking that I'm nothing besides Krishna's servant. And he was absorbed in hearing about Krishna. So we see that we have good examples how we can and we must externally try to act, but internally cultivate that purity and that mood that I'm Krishna's servant. I am the agent of my spiritual master, and I can only act as their instrument. So if you do that, then externally and internally they will be consistent and there will be no problem. Okay, that's what I can think now. Any other ideas or comments, questions? Udayananda Prabhu?
Hare Krishna. In the age of a Kali, chanting Hare Krishna Mahamantra is the main process. Then my question is, why you do the temple day to worship?
Okay, so why do you do also temple worship and so many other things? Why do you do Ratha Yatra? Why do you do prasad distribution? So we do all these things, but always accompanied by the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So the pujari, he's doing deity worship, but he's chanting so many mantras while he's... Even at home, for example, I do puja, I have a shila. So during more than half an hour, I chant so many mantras for the spiritual master, for Gauranga, for Krishna, for Govardhan, for Vrindavan. So if I wouldn't do that puja, I probably would very rarely chant those mantras. But because I have the puja, that regulates me and makes me every day recite those mantras. And it's a very nice thing. So the process of deity worship in this age is very powerful, but it should be accompanied by chanting. So that's the prescription. In the same way that we, like, not only the pujari is chanting, also when the deity is giving darshan, all the devotees, they are having congregational chanting. And if you wouldn't have the deities, how often would we be meeting and having congregational chanting? Because most of us, we chant together the Hare Krishna Mahamantra when we take darshan of the deities every day. During darshan arati, doing mangal arati, doing sandhya arati, that's the time that we meet. So the deities, they bring all the devotees together to sing the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So it's a source of inspiration, it is a way to make sure that we chant the Mahamantra. Otherwise, if it's just the Mahamantra, unless we are like Haridas Thakur or great advanced devotees who have a deep attachment for the name, we may not chant. But having Krishna there inspires us to chant. You know? That's one thing. Any other ideas? Or yes, Mataji? Yes, so it helps us if you're not so advanced. But we can see Krishna in the form of the deity. It helps us to focus the mind in Krishna. So it's not contradictory, it's actually complementary. One thing is helping another. There is only advantages. If you chant while you do puja, when you do archana, that helps, that increases the quality of your archana. And at the same time, if you do archana while you're chanting, that increases the quality of your chanting. Now you have the deity there present, and the kirtan is much louder. Is much more enthusiastic, the devotees are much more inspired because they can see Radha Madhava there, so beautiful and inspiring us. You see the Panchatattva there, no? Imagine, wonderful kirtans that we have here every day because of the deities. Okay, so it's important to have both things. Prabhupada said it's like a train, no? Going on two tracks, the Pancharatrika Vidhi and the Bhagavata Vidhi, and you need both for the train to progress safely, steadily. Okay? So thank you very much. Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.